Chapter 14. Dorian sat in the shoot room, balancing the crap pot strapped to his back on the edge of one of the chutes. This was the last pot of the day, and Dorian was sore, exhausted, and grumpy, and he got to spend most of every day in the company of beautiful women. The shoot room slaves spent every day in this foul room, directing the slaves who brought in all of the Citadel's human waste and maintaining the sewage chutes, and he was the happiest slave Dorian ever met. Dorian still gagged every time he opened the door. How the hell could Tobby be chipper? Aching, Dorian stretched his back as he waited for Tobby to finish with the slave from the guards' quarters. Tobby pulled two levers, waited for a few moments, and then pulled a chain to the sound of distant clanking. Then, the man untied the top rope on his pack, and Tobby tipped the pot over, sloshing the contents down the chute. A rope, attached to the bottom, kept the pot from following the sewage down the chute. After he finished, Tobby walked over to Dorian.
"This your last run?"
Dorian yawned and stretched. "Yes, I..." He lost his balance, and the weight of the crap pot yanked him backward toward the open maw of the chute. He screamed and jerked to a stop as Tobby threw himself against Dorian's knees. For several moments, it was agony as the weight of the pot pulled against the sinews of his legs and stomach, trying to pull him into oblivion or rip him in half. But as the open-topped pot released its contents down the chute, the pain faded. Once the pot was empty, Tobby was able to help Dorian out of the chute.
"Trying to follow your predecessor, huh?"
Tobby asked.
"What?"
Tobby chuckled.
"Why do you figure they needed another eunuch? Last harem carrier did what you just did, only I wasn't so fast that day."
"Shit," Dorian said. Tobby laughed loudly, like a braying donkey. Surely the man couldn't be amused by feces. Dorian began shaking from his brush with death. Good God, it hadn't even occurred to him to use his talent.
"Funny thing is," Tobby said, "he didn't die from the ride. They killed him."
"What do you mean? Where does this chute go anyway?"
"Where does this shit go anyway?"
Tobby echoed, then laughed again.
"Down to the mines. Nearly drops on the heads of them sorry bastards. Soon as Airy fell in the chute, I routed him to one of the safe ones. Would have saved his life, if he had sense."
"Safe ones?" Dorian asked.
"You don't know shit, do you?"
He punched Dorian in the arm.
"Good one, huh? Eh?"
"Funny," Dorian said, forcing himself to smile ruefully.
"Didn't see that one coming, did you?"
"Nope. Didn't see that coming."
"I got a million of 'em,"
Tobby said.
"I bet."
If ever there was a man who deserved his slavery, I've met him. "Why are some chutes safe?" Dorian asked.
"These chutes been here hundreds of years. First, there was only one chute. At first, it was a couple hundred-foot drop from the bottom of the chute to the bottom of the chasm. Well, after a couple hundred years with 20,000 folks shooting shit down it, there was no drop at all. Good old Batty Bertold got real nervous, thought an army or the pit slaves themselves might climb up the chute and attack the citadel from within. So he built this. Now, when the shit gets within 50 feet of the bottom of the chute, we switch to a new chute. We let that first one sit until it's all soil. Then the pit slaves cart it up, and the guards sell it for fertilizer. Course, I got to use all the chutes at least once a day so they don't rust up, and so the pit slaves can't tell where the soil is firm under a few inches of crap and where the soup is deep enough to drown in. When Airy went down, I switched up the chutes so we'd have a chance.
How fast can you do that? Dorian asked.
Tobby tisked and pulled the third and the eighth lever and pulled the last chain. It took him about 3 seconds. Dorian whistled, fixing the positions in his mind.
What happened to him?
He gave some shit to one of the Meisters down there. Can't say I blame him after what he'd been through.
Sounds like he had a shitty day.
Dorian felt dirty for the pun.
Uh-huh, Tobby said, not catching it.
Two Meisters guard the pit slaves. It don't make 'em happy. They don't take no shit. They turned Airy inside out.
He shook his head, somber. A moment later he grinned.
They don't take no shit, huh? Huh?
He punched Dorian's arm. Dutifully, Dorian laughed. I could take two Meisters. When Dorian returned from emptying the crap pots, the concubines were keening. Dorian had never heard anything like it. He set the crap pot down and stared at Hopper.
It's the God King,
the old man whispered, frozen by the sound from the next room.
We just got news.
He's dead.
Dorian's heart stopped.
My father's dead.
He wandered into the great room of the harem in a daze. Nearly 200 women were gathered in the cold marble luxury of the place. They were tearing their clothes, ripping out their hair, beating their naked breasts, scratching bloody furrows in alabaster skin. Black tears rolled from cold eyes. Some had flung themselves on the floor, weeping uncontrollably. Others had fainted. In grief, as in love and in drink, Dorian's people were extravagant. But these women's tears were not for show. They had all lived in awe and terror of the God King, and few of them would have dared love him. None of his favorite concubines were here. No one would report who had wept and who had not. But His Holiness had been the center around which their lives revolved. Without that center, everything collapsed. They would be compelled to throw themselves on Gareth's pyre to accompany him to the afterlife and be his slaves forever. And Gareth had always liked his women young. Dorian saw one beautiful girl, Prisha. She was barely 14 and just past her flowing, sitting alone, staring into space. She was still a virgin. Yorbis Zerga had intended her as a present to the God King when he arrived home.
You have a chance,
Dorian told her woodenly.
The next God King might claim you.
All my friends are going to die,
Prisha said, not even looking at him. Her answer shamed him. She hadn't been thinking of herself. This place was starting to make him think cynically, like the old Dorian. The other implications of Gareth's death pounded Dorian a moment later. The God King had left no clear heir, and whichever Aethling succeeded him would certainly kill off the others. If the concubines knew of Gareth's death, the Aethlings would soon, if they didn't already.
Janine.
Dorian burst into the eunuch's room where he'd left Hopper.
Get them all out of here, he ordered the old man. Start with the virgins.
What?
Hide them in my room. At least one of the Aethlings will try to seize the God King's harem as a declaration that he should be the next God King. Or the guards may go crazy. You can't hide all of them, but at least the virgins will have a chance to be claimed by the next God King. If they get raped, they'll die with the others.
Hopper nodded at once.
Done, he said.
Dorian ran up the Tiger Tower. The dreads guarding at the base of the tower were gone, and his heart dropped. He sprinted up the steps, three at a time. He heard raised voices as he came up the last 20 steps.
"Come, or I hurt you, and then you come."
"All right," Janine said, defeated.
The latch had been melted off the door.
The fucker.
It was Tavi, come to violate Janine. Dorian kicked open the door just in time to see Janine pull out the dagger he'd given her and bury it in a young man's chest. He screamed, and his veer rose to the surface of his skin instantaneously. A white ball the size of a fist slammed into Janine's chest and threw her across the chamber. He turned at the sound of the door bursting open, but he didn't have time to move before Dorian's flame missiles hit him. Six burrowed through his chest and out his back before he fell face down, dead. It wasn't Tavi. It was Rivik, Tavi's sidekick. Dorian went to Janine. She was whimpering, struggling to breathe. Her chest concave with six broken ribs. Dorian put his hand on her chest, seeing the damage. She relaxed as he washed away her pain. Bone after bone snapped into place, seamlessly, and in moments, Dorian was done. Janine stared at him, wide-eyed.
"You came.
I'll always come for you."
She inhaled experimentally.
"I feel perfect."
Dorian smiled shyly and then started grabbing candelabra, tiger statuary, anything he could find made of gold.
"We can't carry all that," Janine said.
Dorian dropped the unwieldy pile on the table. He winked at her and put his hands on each object in turn. One by one, they melted. The gold puddled onto the table, separating and connecting into lumps like quicksilver. The lumps began congealing, thinning, hardening, until each was a flat disk bearing the likeness of Garoth or Sul.
"What? How?"
Janine stuttered.
"The coins are only worth a fraction of what the art was, but they are a more liquid asset."
He smiled as she giggled in wonder. He allowed himself that smile, but things were not going according to plan.
Damn it!
Everything was ready for tomorrow. The worst of it wasn't the wasted preparations, the lack of horses, the lack of warm clothing for the perilous crossing through screaming winds, the lack of dried food. It was that Dorian had used southern magic. Any Meister who smelled him would sense it. Lux Bridge might drop him into the chasm. The chaos in the castle might not help them. More soldiers and Meisters would surely be running about, and more Ethlings definitely would. It meant that all Dorian's meticulous memorization of guards' watch routes and personal habits was for nothing. Still, he was here. The armies of the God King were not, nor were any of the God King's older sons. Janine was alive and safe, and the passes south were still open. In his wrath, he had vented far too much magic on Rivik, but he still had some left, enough to take care of a Meister, or even a Würdmeister, if caught unawares.
"What are you doing?"
he asked, as Janine turned Rivik's body over. He didn't want her to have to look at that.
"I can't go like this. I'm taking his clothes," she said.
Together they stripped Rivik. There was blood on the front of the tunic, where Janine had stabbed his chest, and six small burn holes on both front and back. But otherwise, the tunic was fine. Rivik had been a slight youth, so the tunic was only a little big.
Janine threw off her blouse and pulled on the dead youth's tunic, not asking Dorian to look away or turn his back. He stared at her, slack-jawed, frozen, then looked away, embarrassed, then wondered why he was embarrassed and she was not, and looked again, and looked away. He was twice her age. She was beautiful. She was brazen. She was being perfectly sensible. They didn't have time to be coy. Her head emerged from the tunic, and she saw the look on his face. "Hand me the trousers, would you?" she asked, nonchalantly. The color in her cheeks told him it was a bluff, so he matched brazenness for brazenness and watched her as she pulled off her skirt. She snatched the trousers from his hands.
"If you don't watch it, half-man, you're going to be considerably more than half a..."
she said with a significant glance at his trousers, but then her eyes went past Dorian to the body behind him. Her jest died, and her high color drained away.
"Let's get out of here," she said. "I hate this place. I hate this whole country."
She finished dressing in silence and pulled on the floppy hat Dorian had frequently worn to cover his own face as much as possible, piling her long hair on top of her head in a bundle. In the end, it was a poor disguise, not because of the clothes, but because Janine didn't walk like a man and couldn't learn in the few moments Dorian was willing to spare trying to teach her. But if she didn't look like a man, she didn't look like a princess either. They'd just have to hope everyone was distracted.